morning, everyone.
The Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. We're going to start with a work session on Senate Bill 1504. Looking for a motion to vote that bill out, Senator Finley.
Chair Hess, I move the -1 amendment be adopted into Senate Bill 1504.
Senator Finley moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 1504. Is there a discussion? This changes the bill. Are there objections to the amendment? One objection, Senator Canope. Two objections, Senator Finley. So the measure passes 3-2. Senator Finley, the amendment is adopted.
Go to the next page. Is that what you're saying?
1504 as amended.
Excuse me. I'm just slow at turning my page. Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 1504 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Finley moves Senate Bill 1504 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Chair Hess, I have some concerns with this bill as I went through it again this morning and the amendments. I'm trying to ensure that the reimbursement component works for residents living outside the areas that are not covered. So I have some concerns, and until I can get those resolved in my own mind, I'm going to know.
Thank you. Senator Taylor.
Thank you. I don't know if it's possible at all, and I understand if it's not, Chair Hess. Is it possible to have Senator Finley's question answered before we take the vote? I don't know if it's possible or not.
Would you like to take that one on, Jamie?
Senator Hess and Finley, I'm not certain what we mean about the reimbursement component in 1504.
Well, I wasn't prepared to go into great detail at this very moment because of that, because I didn't think I had this opportunity. So
I don't think I can answer that question.
Yeah, I don't know that you can. I would like to have a conversation with Senator Robel.
Okay.
And I will beforehand.
All right.
Before the floor vote.
Okay. Further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Thank you.
Senator No.
No.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Senator Finley.
No.
Senator
Hass. Hass votes aye. The measure passes. Senator Taylor will be the carrier. Will close that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 1578.
See, I had to vote no, so I wouldn't carry it. I'm just kidding.
Senator Finley, I think we're ready to go. We don't have any amendments.
Okay. Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 1578 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Finley moves Senate Bill 1578 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Taylor? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Knope? No.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Finley?
No.
Senator Hass?
Hass votes aye. Senate Bill 1578 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Taylor will be the carrier. Close out court position. Thank you, Mazza.
Hey,
that was brilliant.
Good job. That's right spot on.
I can do these things.
All right, I want to move into a work session on Senate Bill 1531, Interstate Broadcasters. We won't be voting on it today, but we will get an update on amendments that are being worked on, if that's possible. I'm sorry. 1531.
Yeah.
Yes, Kyle. We'll take up Interstate Broadcasters after that. I was mixing my bills.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1531 is the omnibus measure you have in front of you. do have a dash 9 amendment, which is just building on the previous amendments that this committee's seen. It is a gut and stuff amendment. But I would refer you to in the meeting materials, there is some information on a section by section description of what's in the measure. And if it's helpful, I think there's just the additional changes.
Yes, that would be helpful.
Thanks. Okay. So we'll get that pulled up on the screen here shortly. So again, the section contents and the changes, the first change that's different from what was discussed in the public hearing begins in section 10A, and that's related to the property tax deferral program, and it's adding a one-year sunset extension of that program. And that the general idea there is just to give a little bit more time, a little more breathing room to maybe take up the discussion in the longer session. So again, that's just moving that out one more year. So the final year of property tax deferral payments would be the 2022-2023 tax year. The next change are in sections 12 and 12A, and that's related to the individual development account credit. And this is in response to some testimony from neighborhood partnerships, which administers the credit, but the change here will be the credit essentially will sunset 2 years prior than what's in current law, with the idea being rather than using the credit as a mechanism for funding, they'll be seeking a direct appropriation instead. And then moving on to section 15 through 18, the short line railroad credit. Originally, the changes in the first version that you saw at the public hearing was just some clarification language and statute reference corrections. There's new changes here related to this credit that are, it's really a reorganization, a reworking of the credit statute. The end result is expected to be more or less the same, and that is reflected in the minimal revenue impact statement. But so the changes here are adding an additional limit, putting in place for the short line railroads that can qualify for this credit, but then adjusting this, there was before a distinction between tier one and tier two, the size of the railroad and such. And the only distinction now going forward will be between publicly owned rail lines and all others. There was a change to the $4 million biennial cap is now a $2 million annual cap instead. So it's just a little bit easier to administer rather than looking at the cap in biennial terms. And then the last one, the last change I'd highlight is modifying the prioritization process of if that the demand for the credits exceeds that, what will be the $2 million cap. So in the new language, the publicly owned rail lines will be first in line to receive that credit, and then there'll be a percentage, potential percentage reduction for the remaining short lines with the demand of a credit after an initial $250,000 that would be allotted to each rail line. So a little bit reworking there, but again, the general idea with the changes here in statute is not to change the credit in how it was originally constructed in the last session. It's just reworking the language in many ways. Then on to page 2, section 23, the vehicle privilege tax. This is just allowing the Department of Revenue share information with DMV for administering that tax. There was, next is sections 24 and 26.
We said we needed a law to do that?
We did, yes. Just adding one statute reference to allow them to do that, yes.
Okay.
The 24, sections 24 and 26, the committee received testimony on this for the city of Portland, some background checks. This will allow them to, they needed a statutory change to conduct background checks of their individuals that would work in their financial department, and this would ensure that they can still can receive the federal tax information to help in their administration of their tax programs.
This will save the city of Portland $13 million.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that was in some of the information I received as well. You won't see that $13 million in the revenue impact statement.
No.
But yes, that is a potential that was put forward, yeah, by the city of Portland and going forward. And then the final change here was section 27 related to a report on a guilty income that the Department of Revenue will be putting together. That's extending that by 2 years to give the department more time to actually receive all the returns that will help them in producing that report. So that'll be coming to you 2 years later than what was in current law when it was passed. And those are there's a few tweaks here and there throughout, but those are the major changes that have been updated since the last time you saw this.
Rural medical provider?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we do have the dash 4 amendment. It is, this amendment is to the introduced version of the bill, so it's not building in the gotten stuff, the dash 9. But this is just a one-year change of the rural medical provider tax credit. This was a credit that was expanded slightly by House Bill 2847 in the last session. And the first date of enactment would be January 1st, or tax year is January 1st, 2020. So tax year 2020 going forward. And the dash 4 would make that, would put that change in place January 1st, 2019. So that would apply to one tax year earlier than what was passed in the last session.
What was behind that?
It is it's an amendment that came from Representative Reschke, and I think it was just trying to get that going right away right now for the providers that could qualify for that credit. So right now it is set up in the starting 2020 through 2026. So it does have that standard six-year window, but that would just be starting that right now, the tax year that people are filing their taxes for at this time.
Right. So the language above that dash 4, are those in the threes?
All the language above the dash 4, that's in the dash 9.
In the dash 9, okay.
And it's really been the dash 9 in the previous amendments that we've seen out there, the amendment has built upon itself, more or less. So when you go back to the dash 3 or the dash 4, you'll see a lot of the same language, yeah. But more things have been added to the dash 9 as it's grown.
Okay, in terms of revenue impacts, do you have that chart?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Actually put it into the revenue impact statement.
Okay.
For the dash 9. The dash 4 will tell you it's about $200,000 for that rural medical credit for that 1 year. But the dash 9, most of the changes in the measure are minimal, and that's reflected in the table in the revenue impact statement. The two changes that are above minimal would be the individual development account credit, because we're sunsetting that
right.
2 years early. There is revenue lift in that the credit won't be used for those 2 years that are otherwise allowed under current law. So you see that there. And then also there was the refund interest related to the Department of Revenue, where they're making that change of the date for that errant on that was put into statute. We would see expecting about a one-year lift of about $300,000 for some of those back refunds, and then minimal going forward.
No, this was what I was looking for and wanted the committee to see, that all of these are minimal except for those that have sort of countervailing changes like the IDA.
And I should note on the refund interest, that's really avoiding the refunds. This was described, someone testimony, refunds that haven't gone out, but that would without this change. So it's just avoiding sending those refunds out, really. And then just a note on the fiscal impact. We received the fiscal impact statement. It largely minimal. There was one note related to the background checks. For the city of Portland, it's expected to be minimal, but if there was a lot more use than what was expected in the fiscal impact statement, they could see where that could raise some costs for the Oregon State Police. But right now, they're looking at that still being a minimal at this time.
Okay. The nines are ready to go?
Yes.
And there's the paperwork is in?
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions? Senator Riley?
So there are a couple of transferable tax credits in this, and you know, I really think that's a very inefficient way to fund things. I'll be voting yes on this, but there's a lot of good stuff in here. But in general, transferable tax credits are extremely inefficient and push the cost out to future legislatures, which I think is a problem. So we need really good reasons to have transferable tax credits in my mind. The couple that are in here are acceptable, but in general, I think we should look very carefully at any transferable tax credits.
Okay. And we are making some progress with the IDA.
I know.
Yeah. I think it's forward progress.
It is good progress.
Yeah. I've learned that things don't all happen all at once down here in the Capitol.
Really?
and a shock.
Well, committee, this is not pre-wired or anything. If you're ready to vote this out, we can do that now. All right, Senator Finley.
Chair Hess, I move the -4 and the -9 amendments be adopted into Senate Bill 1531.
Senator Finley, just
do one at a time.
Yeah, we can do the 4 and the 9.
Just do the 9s.
Yeah, just the 9.
Okay. So let me amend that amendment.
Okay.
I move the -4 amendment be adopted into Senate Bill 1531.
Senator Finley, we're not going to do the 4s in this bill.
Okay.
It's just the 9s.
Okay.
So,
I thought I did that. I just did that. My amended amendment. You want to start again?
Okay.
Start.
Can we have staff tell us what amendments we need?
We just need the 9.
Yeah, the -4 and the -9 would actually stack on each other, so you wouldn't want to adopt them both together.
No, we're just going to adopt. Senator Finley moves that we adopt the -9 amendment to Senate Bill 1531. Correct? Is there any discussion? Objections? Seeing none. -9s are adopted. Senator Finley.
Am I doing the 4 or we're doing the...
I'm just doing the whole bill.
I'm not doing the 4. Just that. I'm kind of bummed out about that. Chair Hess, I move the Senate Bill 1531 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Finley moves Senate Bill 1531 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1531 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll be the carrier on that one. Thank you, committee. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1529. Caitlin, maybe you could update us on where things stand. We're not going to vote on this today. We have some amendments that have come through the door and some gone out the door and some in the down in the workroom.
Yes. So Chair Haas, members of the committee, I can provide an update. I believe the -6s are new to the committee. They're posted on OLIS. The kind of goal of the -6 is to deal with cases or maybe separate out cases where industry maintains that they do not get information about their audience. So Chair, you've mentioned the Netflix example in the past couple committees or past couple hearings. There could be a situation where a network is licensing to Netflix or a similar entity, and Netflix is not providing them information about who's watching their programming. Additionally, they do not, Netflix, for example, might not provide third-party rating information, and so it becomes difficult for taxpayers and the department to agree on an audience ratio. So in the -6, these types of transactions are separated out, kind of identified specifically in statute. So what the -6 does is it replaces the bill. It uses the audience method for most receipts. And then in the cases where audience can't be determined, like I just described earlier, a minute ago, it uses 0.6% of the total licensing and advertising receipts related to those subscription services. So specifically in the cases where audience numbers are not provided, then the 0.6% is kind of a middle ground between audience and commercial domicile. We do have an amendment in the work, which is will add on to the -6 an election for a taxpayer to apportion all of their receipts using the audience factor, as was the case in 2013 with the Comcast decision and then in 2018. So that is what the change will be in the upcoming amendment. And I'm still working on revenue impacts. Likely the -3 and the -6 will both be indeterminate because we don't have a lot of information about the detail of the receipts. But because the -6 is very similar to the audience method, which is our baseline, it will probably be closer to that estimate as well. So that is the update, and I can answer any questions.
Yeah, this was what we called the other day the beginning of a compromise measure committee. Any questions of Caitlin on this hybrid compromise, Senator Finley?
No.
Melissa, would you like to speak to the -6? You're okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Haas, Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee, Melissa Patak with the Motion Picture Association. Thank you very much again for all the time that is being spent, especially to Kate and to Chris, who've really worked overtime on this issue. This is sort of a compromise. We agree with that. And we want to make sure that where the taxpayer has information about its audience, the audience of its customers, that information is allowed to be utilized in any audit proceedings. Our companies have had experiences where, despite the fact that they have this information, it's rejected by DOR, and we do have some concerns about, you know, the continuing reference to population. I do note that in existing regs, it's detailed as to what those kind of third-party ratings are. Our companies have said in the case of advertising, that information is available. They bring it to audit. They will bring it to audit. But it's been the experience, which is why there's those open litigated cases, that's rejected by DOR. So we understand this is where we're at in the process. It is a compromise. But we just want to make sure that it's the committee understands that these ratings services are available and the taxpayers do have this information, but it's often that DOR doesn't accept it. We will move forward, as best we can, with the recognition that now in the statute that third-party ratings are useful and usable for determining the taxpayer's tax responsibilities. And the only other point I would want to make is, hopefully it doesn't come to this, the resort to population, but it says U.S. population. I just want to note for the record that oftentimes in licensing now, our companies, the producers, are licensing for a worldwide audience. Netflix is the perfect example, your illustration. They have customers all over the world. So when one of our companies makes a program that they license to Netflix, it's for a worldwide audience. So that Oregon to the U.S. population is not reflective of what the license fee really is based on. It's based on a worldwide population. And I would note that in the existing regs, there is an illustration of a situation where a broadcaster might have revenue that is resulting from a foreign audience, and that's allowed to be subtracted out. So I just want to make that note for the record that as this industry is changing and growing, we really are dealing with a worldwide audience for much of the programming that's made. And with that, we look forward to the next iteration of this because we do need, we want that election in the instance of a broadcaster, a company wanting to use audience for all of its revenue as a streamlined, efficient way to file their taxes.
Questions, Melissa? Okay, thanks. Thanks for putting that out there. Caitlin, will we have that amendment tomorrow morning?
Chair Haas, yeah, I believe we'll have it maybe later today, but by tomorrow morning at the latest.
Okay. Should have something for everybody to see and maybe take action tomorrow or Friday.
Thursday.
I'm sorry, Thursday or Friday.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes our business here today. Committee, thank you. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 1529 and adjourning this meeting. Thank you.